red corner.
Not a lot of respect paid to Blake. He marks and what a empty. And now he's head rolling. Can he put it through for a goal?
Why do you not in the blue corner?
Outside of 50. Bangs it on the chest. Lots of fortune. And Wallace has marked.
Let's get ready to rumble!
On Hungry for Sport, it's time to recap the weekend's action with Martin Blake and Terry Wallace. It's the Weekend Siren.
Yes, the Weekend Siren, of course. Terry's always brought to you by Eco Garage Doors. Don't forget, for the month of May, Eco Garage Doors will be donating $200. That's right, $200. From every insulated garage door sold to your nominated sporting club or charity. Now, we all have a charity close to our hearts or a local sporting club, so it's your choice, and Eco will send $200 on your behalf. So give them a buzz on 9703-1500. That's 9703-1500, or go to ecogaragedoors.com.au to see their exclusive garage door profiles and super smooth motors. Terry, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, KB. Two of the three sides that I represented had fairly good weekends. The other one, the Tigers, not so good whatsoever.
I'd like to hear from Tiger supporters going forward, whether or not you're a little bit disillusioned, or do you think the Tigers can pull it together and still be a force in 2015? Because Martin Blake's side, St Kilda, did very well on the weekend, Martin.
Oh, very stiff, KB. I think they should have won that game, actually. Gee, there were some cracking games on the weekend. I was just saying to Terry off air, you know, the showdown it's brilliant. And I watched that right to the end. It was fantastic. The St Kilda game, and then obviously the Bulldogs that everyone's jumped on. Everyone's on the Bulldog bandwagon at the moment, aren't they?
They are. Just with St Kilda, I was talking about it this morning, Terry, with you know, a couple of St Kilda fans. As you get better as a side, the disappointment gets greater, because when you're getting beaten by 10 and 15 goals, you go along to a game and, you know, the game's over, you know, well and truly before the end of the game. But as you get a little bit better, and St Kilda's improved, I think they're surprised a few people themselves, St Kilda. And as you get better and all of a sudden you get a bit closer to winning games, that hurt and heartache and losing those close ones hurt even more than being belted by 10 or 15 goals.
Yeah, well, the two-goal turnaround in that game late in the match, obviously the Snyder missed, you know, ball carries the whole length of the ground, Collier kicks a goal. Gee, must have hurt. When you're sitting there and you're wanting and willing your side,
tears at the heartstrings.
It's like a dagger, isn't it, that just goes through you. Look, I know it's not going to make any difference to where they finish this year, so therefore it shouldn't matter, but it does matter, Martin.
Look, it was very tough going. Actually, Adam Schneider, in his history, and we all know this, he's what he really has as a player. He's not a great player, but he's a pretty good player, and he's a terrific finisher. He's always been an excellent finisher. I mean, this is a guy that kicked three last quarter goals in the 205 preliminary final against St Kilda when he was playing at Sydney. So he's a great finisher. So when he had that ball in his hands with the set shot in particular, I thought, he'll do this.
Back him in.
It's amazing, isn't it, what pressure does to guys. And then he missed another one with 3 minutes to go when he's running in, and he could have either handballed it off or probably should have kicked it anyway. So, look, I was wrapped with that performance by St Kilda KB, to be honest, when I sat down and looked at it later. Because I think as long as they're competitive, they're going to get a high draft pick, Terry, aren't they?
Again,
so
yep.
They're going to get another good run in the draft next year, and they're competitive, and I liked I don't know what you thought, I liked the way they moved the ball, you know. They took
classy.
The game on, and they were still scoring at the end. Like, they missed a few shots at the end, but they were still pushing the ball forward and trying to score.
There was another incident close to the end of the game, Martin, you'll recall. St Kilda going forward, running in towards goals, and there was a St Kilda player. All he had to do was handball to the St Kilda player, and he just threw the ball onto his left boot, and it sort of just floated. It may have even floated out of bounds next to the behind post.
Yes.
Really close to the end of the game as well. It was like they had three opportunities to actually get easy goals, and they stuffed every one of them up.
Yeah, just composure wasn't quite there, was it?
Look, there is a lot to like. I like Billings as a player. I think he's going to be a really nice player. Loney, a couple of Loney's moves, you know, a couple of little deft hand passes, you know, behind his head to open up play. He's a really smart player. Bruce, I heard you mention him earlier on today, KB. Yeah, what a really good player he's become for the football club. Really has grown in confidence now. And I like the way that Armitage is leading the group. He's really become the player that I think everyone at St Kilda thought he was going to be.
I think the Tigers made a play for David Armitage. Just on that, to all supporters out there, tell us, what is the positive that so far has come out of the first five rounds for your club, whether you're winning or losing? What is the positive? Because Josh Bruce surely is the big positive for St Kilda. They went and got Paddy McCartan because they're looking to the future. They'll need another key forward because of Nick Riewoldt. But they picked up Josh Bruce. I remember Bruce running around playing in defence. That's where I was, you know...
Absolutely. Well, that's what they got him as a key defender.
Yeah, never saw him play as a forward. And then all of a sudden St Kilda picks him up. And all of a sudden on the forward line, he's kicked a couple of big bags of goals.
Well, okay. how much time, Martin, have they put into trying to find, you know, the next key position forward? You go through all their picks over a period of time. Tommy Lynch is running around playing over in Adelaide. Obviously, last year going and getting McCartan.
Rhys Stanley.
Spencer White. You just keep going. Mm. And all of a sudden they might have fluked that forward.
Did they get him as a forward or as a backman?
No, they picked him up as a backman. Did they? 100% picked him up as a backman, and it just wasn't quite working, and they've taken him forward, and he just plays it more naturally.
Well, that was a team, KB, that played without Riewoldt, Montagnier, and even a Sam Gilbert. You know, so they're just really lacking on experience. But Terry's point about Armitage is good. I mean, David Armitage was a top 10 pick, and he actually took quite a long time to really make his mark, but he has now. He's very tough around the ball. He had a bit of an issue with turnovers, but he's probably improved that a bit as well.
Let's take some early calls. Matt's out on the road. G'day, Matt.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking everything that I was about to say.
Pleasure.
Terry, thank God you didn't mention Tom Lee there, because I'm still...
Tommy Lee's another key forward, yeah?
No, he's not.
Well, he was recruited as one.
Yeah, he's actually been playing very well at Sandy for the last 3 weeks as a centre-half-back, so maybe there's a bit of hope there.
Are you surprised, Matt? I mean, a lot of people said St Kilda wouldn't win a game. We know they have won a game, and on the weekend, no one gave him any chance at all against the Bombers, and that's without Riewoldt and Montagnier. So are you happy, Matt, in what you're seeing down at St Kilda?
I am far beyond delighted. I love the fact that our club has a plan. I like the fact that our coach is a player's coach. He doesn't get ahead of himself. I like the fact that they have basically tried to build up an arsenal of midfielders and get some young key position players in who'll be good to go when we need them to go, and we won't have to pay $7 million for them. I love Loney and Sinclair. Those two kids have got some serious tricks, and I think that the development in our club will come from just natural progression. It doesn't require anything other than good drafting and good list management.
Look, I think you're right, Matt. And the other thing, Martin, they've put in a lot of time into their development processes. They knew they were going to go young. They were prepared to give away players to get picks and young players in. That's all fine to do that, but you've actually got to have a good development plan then as well. And I think they've put a lot of effort and finance into their development programs.
Yes, well, Alan Richardson, of course, was known as probably the best development guy out there before he got a head coaching job. So that's the style of person he is. He's a teaching person. They've done extremely well with their training as well.
You know, Hickey was good on the weekend.
Who's that?
Hickey.
Yeah, look, he's a good player, Hickey. He's been, you know, he had an injury and then he came back through the reserves. And while he was out, Billy Longo sort of played quite well. So
can they play the two of them together? That's always the $20,000 question.
I'm doubtful, but actually Longo did most of the main ruck work on the weekend, and they played Hickey up forward, and Hickey actually got a bit of the football, which was encouraging. Yeah.
Well, he had
obviously
a 19
Riewoldt,
times.
You know, Riewoldt comes back into that mix. That's the thing, you know. Could you have Riewoldt, Bruce and Hickey all in the one forward line? Maybe not. I'm not sure.
Bit doubtful, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw Hickey, I reckon, must have been early game last year. I reckon he kicked 3 goals in a game.
Correct. Yep.
Just, you know, playing forward. So he's got ability.
He is a good player.
Lucas is in East Malvern. G'day, Lucas. G'day, Lucas. Want to talk about the Tigers?
Yes, indeed, I do. Suffering Richmond fan at the moment, like most of us are, I guess. Look, just a couple of things. First thing I want to talk about is Hardwick. I think, I think at the moment Hardwick's sort of done his dash. I think it's hard with the boys that he has in the team, but I think we need someone at the moment who's just a little bit harder. I think Hardwick's quite soft, and I think that's actually gone down into the boys. I think we're a soft team. I think we don't attack the footy hard enough. I think we use the footy decently well, but we're not hard. I mean, you can't really point out one guy you'd say, yeah, you know, he's a hard bloke in our team or throws his body around. I mean, even when the boys are in a bit of strife and, you know, don't get around them. And I just think we're a bit soft. And I think also Hardwick in itself, I think he's kept us mediocre and, you know, he's got us in the finals a couple of times. But we need someone who's really going to drill in, really going to, you know, fight for blood and what Richmond's about, not what we're playing at the moment.
Well, the Tigers, I think, can play a lot better, obviously, than what they're doing now. But I don't know how fast individually the players are, but I don't think they play a fast style of game. I think we play a bit crab-like. I think we go too much sideways. Again, just watching the Bulldogs over the last couple of weeks, and they're a little bit of a yardstick for a side that wants to improve.
They are quick, aren't they?
They're quick, and they want to go forward. And even when they're in trouble and they want to handball, they'll handball the ball over their head 15 metres if they have to, as long as it's going forward. So I think there's something in that. And I also take a little bit from the Tigers just finishing at the end of that game against Geelong, and I made mention of that again this morning, Terry, that, you know, sometimes when you've got no chance of winning the game, you loosen up a bit, you know, you take a risk, the shackles come off and all of a sudden you run, you go forward and nothing to lose. And to me, Richmond, you know, on the weekend kicked four goals, the last four goals. So I just wonder whether somehow, you know, they've got themselves tightened up too much and they just won't attack enough and use the ball by going forward and become too much possession orientated and playing a sideways game.
Well, you can even extend that, because I thought exactly the same thing happened on Saturday, but you extend that to last year. All of a sudden, when this season was over, all of a sudden they just throw caution to the wind and sort of say, oh, we're just going to go out and just play naturally now, and what, we've got nothing to lose. We've always got something to lose in this business, Martin.
Should Damien have played Rance on Hawkins right from the start? I looked at that and I thought it was pretty obvious.
Well, it didn't take long, did it?
I know that he
was there by quarter time.
In fairness to him, we're talking, you know, it's very easy from over the fence, but he did say afterwards that Asprey played on Hawkins last year and played well on him, so that was the reason he went with that. And it seemed to me, Terry, that they want to use Rance maybe on the second or third best forward because he's such a good offensive player, good ball getter.
Like Matthew Scarlett used to do for
And really, That's exactly what happened last year in the early part of the year when Asprey, I think he was coming second in the club's best and fairest. He hasn't quite got back to that level of footy yet because just of inconsistencies. He just hasn't had any continuity of football at all. So I can understand what they were doing, but sometimes, particularly with Clark out, you knew all the focus was going to be going early in the game to Hawkins. You would have liked to have Rance
in. Well, in actual fact, Hawkins was the one player who could beat Richmond.
Correct.
So Rance had to go to him.
We'll take a break. Coming back with your calls along with Gazelle and Plough. Weekend Siren, of course, with Martin Blake and also with Terry Wallace. And we're taking your calls. And Steve joins us in Camberwell. G'day, Steve.
Yeah, how you going, boys?
Steve, we're going great.
Well, mate, Kevin, I think you're overcomplicating the reasons why Richmond lost that game on Friday night.
Yep.
Was that today?
Yep.
But I was there, and I think you should look at why Geelong won. And I think you'll find that the Geelong players were willing to bust a nut to win.
Well, that could be the case too. That could be the case too, Steve. I'd like to hope and think that the Richmond players would do that too. But I just wonder at the moment that they just haven't got the right frame of mind in the style of play that they want to play. And I think Terry brought up a good point that last year when any loss in the last nine games, it was all over. So you could play with reckless abandonment, you know, because no one expects you to win nine on the trot, so we'll go out and we'll have a crack. And, you know, they played some very, very good football. I mean, it was good. I thought it was a very good effort by Geelong on the weekend, Steve. I thought when Mitch Clark came out of the side as well, that there was nearly a gimme game for the Tigers.
Stokes, Mackie.
No, Bartel's not there. Mackie's not there, as you say. Stokes not there. It was very good. Steve, what did you think of young Gregson? I noticed I'm getting a few SMSs on the machine here saying that they thought Gregson was very good on the weekend. He's going to be a real positive for the Cats.
Oh, look, he's been great the last three games, really. I mean, he's to me, he reminds me of Wojcinski.
Oh, yeah.
He's looking real good. A lot of electricity. And quite surprisingly, his disposal, I think his efficiency is quite good. It nearly goes to a Geelong player every time he gets rid of it as well as getting it.
Yeah, they were very good, Geelong. I was there at the MCG on Saturday, and I thought they really set up the victory in about 15 minutes in the second quarter where they busted the game open. Yeah, Richmond come at them a couple of times, but they just got enough of a lead at that stage in the second quarter to really set up their victory.
And they won the contested ball, Terry, which you're red hot on.
Well, I mean, it's been an area that they haven't been able to beat anyone in. And that's a little bit of the bust the gut situation. Yeah. You know, they really knew it was a season-defining game for them.
I think it was huge for Geelong, that, because apart from anything else, Joel Selwood didn't have to step up and win the game for him. I know that Selwood played a good last quarter, but he was well held up until then by Griggs. So, he didn't have to absolutely dominate from start to finish for them to win the game. They had other guys like Mitch Duncan who stepped into the breach.
And you had a caller earlier on, KB, that I agree with. I thought 18 months ago or 2 years ago when Richmond stepped out for their first finals campaign, they've gone backwards since then. They're not as good a team as what they were 2 years ago. And I don't know why that's the case, because when you look at all their senior players, they are all in the right age bracket that they should actually still be improving or at their best at the moment, and they've gone backwards.
Does it mean that Delidio is a much more important player to the Richmond setup than a lot of people believe?
I have no doubt that that's the case, because what he is as well is he's flexible. You can put him into any problem spot on the ground. I think he's played his best football as that high half forward rotating through the middle of the ground, but anywhere that you've got a bit of a deficiency, you can play him in that area.
Darren's in Armstrong Creek. G'day, Darren.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, Daz.
That's good. Earlier you asked about players that have really stepped up for your club. Well,
yeah, positive.
A positive. And one that we love down here at Geelong is Mark Bleakhouse. He's just been just sensational. And I really felt that he got our running game going on Saturday afternoon. It wasn't perfect like in the past, but I really think he's very versatile, boys.
Spot on. Absolutely spot on, Darren. His improvement has been enormous, Martin, in their side. And one of the other things is his decision-making has got a lot better. We know that he came in, steeplechaser, had to sort of really learn all about how to play the game, but he's improved enormously.
It's interesting, at the first bounce, in quite a few of the stoppages around the ground, they had a ruckman, Dawson Simpson, plus Blixhaves there, and he's really a ruckman, so he's sort of a running ruckman, and a lot of times he came third man up, so it was probably an attempt to get on top at the stoppages, which they've had issues with. Look, the upside with Mark Blixhaves is enormous, and he just needs to learn a little bit more about playing the game. But athletically, he's very good, and he's very courageous.
Well, he's elite,
as well,
isn't he? Yeah.
He's very courageous as well.
Darren, did you know, I was listening to the guys commentating that game. I know he comes from the athletic background, but they suggested, Darren, that prior to actually going down to Geelong, the last time he actually sort of played football was in the under-12s. Did you know that?
We did, yeah. The Geelong Advertiser has been writing that up, and that just shows we've basically... the guys just come from nowhere, and I think that's what makes it hard for opposition clubs to match up on him, because they don't really know a lot about the guy, and they can't match up on him because he can basically do six jobs in one game.
I didn't know he was under 12, so I thought he was one of those kids that probably played some junior football and under 16s or 17s, but had athletics on the side, then thought he was a better athlete than he was a footballer. But when they said last time he'd played football before being picked up by the Catch was the under 12s.
Not a bad effort.
I'm told that when they have their 3K runs and their time trials and stuff down there, it's a joke. He's virtually lapping people. But his father, Andy, had the purest jump shot you could ever see. And his mother, Karen, was a national level basketballer as well.
But what it does do is because of that athletics background, I mean, he just works his way. And you sort of say he wins the time trials that easily. Mm. What he does is he gets into space. Yes. And so he becomes an overlap or link player for them. And all he's got to do then is distribute to the better midfielders at that stage. But that overlap that he gives them is enormous.
Now, Terry, as we go to the break, I'm going to ask you this question and give us the answer when we come back. Bob Murphy on Saturday said the win for the Dogs was his best ever win at the club from his 276 games, and he's had 119 wins. Terry, you coached Bob in his first season. Did he actually forget his third game when the Dogs beat an undefeated Essendon in round 21, or his debut game in round 19 versus Carlton, which we understand was a mighty win for the Dogs as well? So I want you to actually go back in time, put that in the memory bank, and give us an answer when we come back. Plus, we'll take more of your calls, 94291116.
How do you not get emotional about footy? That's one of the best. It's the best game I've ever, best win I've ever been a part of. We know how good Sydney are. They've been a great club for a long, long time, and we're just starting out, but that was pretty special.
Got a Garlic coming through his West. Gives it to Murphy. Can the youngster make a name for himself? Yes, he can.
There's Bob Murphy kicking his first ever goal, of course, and playing against Carlton, that was. He did mention before the break there, we heard Bob Murphy say that was his, the greatest win in his time as a Bulldogs player. Terry, we mentioned a couple of games before, particularly that game against the Bombers, and also his first game against Carlton. Pretty big wins.
Well,
short memory, Bob Murphy.
Well, that game against Carlton, it's every boy's dream, isn't it, to play in a big game, and it was a big game, round 19, Carlton at Carlton, when Cooter was running around. They had a great side back then. They had won 14 in a row, and Bobby Murphy kicked the goal in the last quarter to put us in front, and we got the result then. And then in his third game, it was the game where the Bombers were going to go through the season undefeated, and with a group of kids, because we had a few out on that particular night. Everyone remembers Chris Grant's goal around his body to get us a result against Essendon to stop them from going through undefeated. Then he's had games to get into preliminary finals. So I can understand exactly what he's saying, but Martin, I mean, he is now the leader of a group of pups that he can now sort of see this journey starting for the footy club all over again. And I think as a leader, it takes you to a different level.
Wasn't that the game also when you first flooded back and flooding first came into the game? So you're responsible for the state of the game as it is now, Terry?
Blame Terry.
Well, we might actually have a chat about that, because Port Adelaide are doing something very, very strange at the moment statistically in the game. So they are flooding back more than what we've ever seen a team flood back up until this stage.
Flooding is not dead.
It is not dead at all.
Hey, where has the Bulldogs' improvement come from? I'm just thinking that it's sort of organic, really, because you look at someone like a Murphy having one of his best ever years, and then someone like Liam Pickham, he could be the most improved player in the competition.
Gee, he's playing good footy.
He was a scrubber tagger, who was just hanging on to his place, as far as I could see. If he didn't have someone to play on, 3 years ago, he wasn't worth having in the side. He's averaging about 27 touches a game. He's taken marks over his head. He was brilliant against Sydney on the weekend.
Good against Adelaide too.
Dalhouse has had
fantastic. So tell us about Port Adelaide.
Well, Port Adelaide are managing to win games, but when you have a look at the statistics, it's just really quite incredible. Inside 50s against Adelaide yesterday, they were minus 29. So 71 inside 50s Adelaide, 42 Port Adelaide. You flip that around to playing against Hawthorn last week, it was Hawthorn 79 and Port Adelaide 43. So there were 36 inside 50s down a week ago. There were 29 inside 50s down this week. It's slingshot footy, so they just get all their numbers back and virtually allow the opposition to play more in their forward half, but then get them on the slingshot on the return. But it's got to be risky footy. I mean, if you're going to be allowing your teams against, particularly when you get into finals and you're playing against the best sides, if you're allowing them over 70 inside 50s per game, I personally think it's going to come and bite them.
Well, I think Ken Hinckley sort of said something along those lines after the game, that the discrepancy is too big. One thing I observed from that game, like incredible intensity in that game, as it always is, but for Adelaide to only concede 42 inside 50s but then go for 18 goals in that 42, that means, like I think there's a weakness in Adelaide's defence. Other than Talia, who's a terrific player, didn't have a great game yesterday, but he's an excellent player.
They dropped Hardigan because he got beaten.
So they brought Cheney
before,
in. They're a bit soft down the back, aren't they?
Yeah, well, Stringer got them the week before, didn't he? I mean, so, you've got a couple of issues.
Let's go back to our caller. Steve joins us in Doncaster. G'day, Steve.
G'day, boys. Love the show, KB.
Appreciate it.
Terry, at the start of the year, you didn't give Collingwood much hope. And as a Collingwood supporter, I didn't either, because, people wanting to leave the club and all that sort of stuff. But it just seems to me that a lot of the younger blokes that we've recruited over the off period and over the last couple of years are actually starting to play for Buckley. I mean, noticing, actually being to a couple of games this year, they're manic. Their pressure is manic. Their tackling, is manic. And, the boys are actually looking like they're playing for Buckley, whereas the last couple of years when we had a couple of those big names from the Malthouse era, really, really weren't. And I'm wondering if you would attribute that to the change of personnel over the last couple of years, or, what do you think it is?
Well, first up, I didn't necessarily say that they weren't much of a chance. I gave them eight, because I've got all my my analysis here that I do. I gave them eight certain wins and eight 50-50 games. So that had them around anywhere between that eight and 14 or 15 wins for the season. So that's how I rated them. I did think that they needed to get the first part of the fixturing right, because they've had some real opportunities, obviously Brisbane, Adelaide, St Kilda in particular, you know, a couple of sides that we expected were going to be lower down the ladder. So tick that box. They've got the part right that they needed to get right. Look, I think the futures are right. I believe that the best two sides in the competition without the ball in hand at the moment are the Western Bulldogs and Collingwood. So the sides that really want to hunt, really want to work, really, and it doesn't even necessarily come up just in tackle stats, because it's closing down the space on your opposition, so that got
referred
less
pressure.
Referred pressure. So yeah, that you really want to foot after an opponent. You really want to work with your mates to make it work. I think Collingwood and Bulldogs are doing that better than anyone else. And look, they've still got a lot of young players that we're yet to even see. Moore, Scharenberg, Freeman. You can go through those guys. So. I think they've been brave to do it the way that they've done it, and I hope they get rewarded, because sometimes if you can go down a path with guys that will get you into maybe a top eight finish, but between seventh and eighth, or they've sold them off and realigned themselves, and it's been a brave move.
Kevin, they're second on the ladder, Collingwood. You know, why is no one sort of raving about them? I guess their draw has been fairly kind, but their improvement has been terrific.
Well, with the exception of the Anzac Day game,
When
you have a look at who they've beaten, they're yet to have beaten anything. You can only play on what
they
the draw.
They played Adelaide,
so
got
if they beat
Adelaide.
Geelong this Friday, I suspect the Raiders
it'll start.
Absolutely.
That's a good test for
them. Chris,
good test.
Grundy, Frost, Seedsman, Elliott, Adams, Oxley, Langdon, these are all Nathan Buckley players. They're newish players who are really good. And Collingwood, like a little bit, they've gone about this in a very sort of quiet, methodical way. They haven't gone out and tried to get the gun free agent. They, you know, the players that they picked up, you know, are Jesse White from other clubs. Jesse White, Karnitsis, Taylor Adams, Travis Farco. They're not sort of superstar players, are they? They've spent a lot of money on. So.
No. Well done to Brody Grundy, too. He's having a magnificent season.
And does look like he can play up forward as well. Johnny's in Richmond. G'day, John.
Hi, guys.
Good, John.
Just on, you're on about the Frostfire Browns positives. So I would say for Melbourne, definitely their recruitment that they've done, and they finally got it right with the likes of Gallard, Vandenberg, Frost, and picking up Brayshaw. I mean, obviously Melbourne's recruitment over the last probably 5-6 years has been a disaster. So finally in the last 2 years, you can see that they finally got it right. And, really is bringing the club forward. Even though we lost on the weekend, you can still see a lot of positives there from the recruitment side anyway, but they finally got that right. And just on a side note as well, it looks like Don Barry is actually going to come back and play for Melbourne next year.
Yeah, John, the one thing with the recruitment is they're all tough. They've actually gone out and got physical players who will be prepared
Ray
to play
Shaw's
a physical
a tough
game.
Kid.
Oh, he's a really tough kid. I mean, he was probably in last year's draft the one absolute genuine inside mid of that top sort of seven or eight picks.
Collingwood run to the bye, by the way. They could be 11-1, says the SMS machine. They play Geelong, Richmond, Gold Coast, North Melbourne, Melbourne and GWS. So
Collingwood!
If they get to 11-1, then Nathan Buckley is a genius.
Well, look, that's a pretty good run. It is a pretty good run. I want to see them play sides like North. Because, I mean, I think most of us would think at the moment that North's around a fifth or sixth, somewhere around that sort of mark as a team. That'd be the type of matchup I'd like to see Collingwood.
And Friday night's huge. One thing about Collingwood, Ben Hart's the defensive backline coach. He's been doing that for 4 years. They're number two in defence. They're very good at stopping the opposition.
Then they play, of course, Fremantle in Perth, Hawthorn and Port Adelaide in Adelaide. So that's 3 weeks in a row after the bye. But in those, I mean, look, if they can beat sides like Geelong, and I'll throw in Richmond as well, North Melbourne, then obviously Collingwood's taken a big step. I suppose just at the moment, even though they're second on the ladder, and I know you're very bullish about a Martin, but I think what Terry has pointed out, they played two sides. One's Adelaide and one is the Bombers, and they beat the Bombers on Anzac Day. They lost to Adelaide. The other one's St Kilda and Brisbane and Carlton.
You should expect them.
Should expect to win those games. Yeah. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more of your calls. Welcome back. And, of course, we can siren with Martin Blake and also Terry Wallace. And we're taking your calls, 9429 1116 0433 98 1116. And Andrew has joined us from Nidri. Good day, Andrew.
Oh, good day, Kev. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
Now, I'm an Essendon supporter, and I'm a bit concerned about, well, there's a number of things I'm concerned about, but the main thing is the team balance, and the four line still hasn't worked out to where it should be in player personnel. I just think they're just so, well, I don't think our full forward, Carlisle, is moving very freely at the moment. I think he just seems to be one... very slow. Although he kicked a number of goals
well
on the weekend.
Andrew?
Sorry?
He played pretty well yesterday.
Yeah, he kicked a number of goals, but he just seems not to be able to get to that free flowing. I'm not sure if he's carrying an injury. The goals he got were basically at the drop of the, like in the right spot, the right time type situation. He got the goals fairly easily. There are a number of players out of the side at the moment. Hopefully... that will help, David Myers, Cooney, Paul Chapman, Hocking, Kuma. You've got Alex Brown still to come back, and James Quilty not playing at the moment. So you've got a number of players to choose from, but I just think that's just too one-dimensional. They're too big, and they just seem we're lacking some sort of X factor in that four line.
Well, little Collier was an X factor in the last quarter with his pace, wasn't he?
He's a good player.
Super, super, super quick and kicked a fabulous goal.
Martin,
well,
they'll
get tested by, if you've got any doubts about the Bombers, they'll get tested by Fremantle, of course.
North the next week as well.
But I've still got in the back of my mind that the Bombers have played well against the Dockers before. They put off that marvellous win there, the year before. When James Hurd was under pressure and they got flogged in the first half and then came out and pulled off a big win. So, but it's going to be a big test for him, Andrew.
Yeah, I think that they're actually pretty difficult to assess at the moment, Martin, aren't they? Because they've played very, very well against some of the better sides and they're not quite as well the last couple of weeks.
I thought they were a bit lucky yesterday.
Well, they were very lucky, that's what I'm saying. But, they've beaten Hawthorn. They run within virtually a kick of beating Sydney in Sydney. But then
beaten by Collingwood and nearly lose.
Yeah, comfortably by Collingwood.
So they had the interrupted pre-season where players weren't allowed to play in the NAB games. So they've only won one last quarter out of five. I think that's been a bit of a concern for them. And they, again, as I said, they were just going yesterday, other than Travis Collier running forward and kicking that goal.
Mario is in one turner. G'day, Mario.
G'day, fellas. What's your big rat to Schumacher's run? Schumacher's Hawthorn. I'm one of the young Hawthorn supporter. And absolutely wrapped his day because I think watching the other night wasn't a great game. Didn't play bad either, but he is a good user of the ball. Probably something Frawley doesn't do as well as him. He's a real giver of the ball, Schumacher's, and I think he slots in our back line if he's fit and going well. Just right, he's the right mix in our back line.
Well, he is at the moment with Frawley and Lake out, but you can't fit him in with those two coming back into the side. And I do agree with you, but Mario, that his ball use for a big guy is usually pretty good.
I was surprised he stayed on at Hawthorn.
So was I.
I know a lot of clubs obviously showed a bit of interest in showing makers, but, just looking with Frawley coming to the club, maybe he thinks hang around and maybe Brian Lake's going to play his last year. Not quite certain. But, I expected that he would have grabbed an opportunity and gone elsewhere.
I agree.
Look, he was okay the other night. Okay.
But that was his first game back in. So I think you've got to give him... I think James Frawley was only okay in his first game into the side as well. So.
No.
Michael is in North Melbourne. G'day, Michael.
Oh, g'day, fellas. How are you?
Good. You want to talk about the North and Hawthorn game?
Yeah, I just want to talk about North Melbourne, their mental state. I was there on Saturday night, and I noticed each of the four quarters, they had a goal kicked against them within the first 2 minutes, and then they had another goal kicked right on the quarter-time siren, on the half-time siren, on the final siren, and then they let Hawthorn kick 9 goals from the actual goal square itself. It's like their defensive pressure's just not there.
Hawthorn are so good. They kick easy goals, Hawthorn, don't they?
They do.
Because they work the ball forward, mainly by foot. and beautiful precision kicking. And they set it up so that they get nearly as close as they possibly can to the goals before they give it to the next person.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
They kick a lot of goals from close in.
But also in this game, everyone has a look now at the press and the forward press and the ability to be able to work it. The Kangaroos kept trying to hand pass through the press. I was there Saturday night. They tried to handball their way through the press. And as soon as you go for this first, second, maybe third hand pass, that press will just squeeze in and squeeze in like a boa constrictor. Mm. And you make it actually more difficult. On the flip side of that, Hawthorn, when they were getting pressed by North Melbourne, they just spread the ground and use the ground and get width into their game.
Yeah.
Hawthorn had 250 kicks. North Melbourne had 183 because they had almost one-for-one hand passes to kicks. You just can't play the press by trying to hand pass through it. Hawthorn showed, if North, all North had to do is go and have a look at the tape on how Hawthorn played and to realise what they've got to do next time around.
I think Hawthorn definitely came out with a bit of a mindset, and you know those two incidents were sort of part of that, but it wasn't the only thing. But
how many weeks?
I think that Hodge can get it down from 3-2 on plea. And I think Lewis might get it down from 2-1. I think people go a bit mad about these things nowadays, and with social media.
3-2 for me.
Can I just say, this comes off the SMS machine, says, "Hi, Kevin, I'm a mother of three sons who play Australian rules football. Did you know that one punch kills? Do you think that the 2 weeks out sends a big enough message to all our youngsters who regard Hodge and Lewis as leaders and heroes in the AFL community?"
Well, it wasn't a punch. It was a forearm to the head. Yeah,
I'm
not saying
it's equivalent
it was
to a punch. Don't forget the swimmer got all his jaw all broken when the other swimmer hit him with the forearm.
It was inexplicable, wasn't it? It was very unlike Hodgie. But the Jordan Lewis one was at least he'll be able to argue, or he could argue it was an act of play. It was a very crude sort of swinging arm spoil that went wrong, and it was late. So they're definitely going to do some time. I think, you know, around the 2 weeks.
I agree. I think they're both 3 weeks being able to get it down to two.
Well, intentional and medium contact is 3-2. That would be for Hodge, I reckon. I think Lewis will end up being careless and medium, and that would be 2-1.
Got a question for you when we come back after the break.